Hosseini is an actor, writer, consultant, and trans advocate. As an actor, she can be seen on Law & Order SVU, Falling Water, Big Dogs, and Madam Secretary. Also be sure to check out her new film, See You Then, on Instagram, at See You Then Film, and follow her personal Instagram, at Puyaland.
Lost control of it for a moment. There's hello. Did you like it?
Yeah. Did we start?
Yeah. Oh. Hi, everyone. This is Dress for the Podcast You Want. My name is David.
I'm Megan.
And this is Dress for the Podcast You Want. It's a podcast.
Sorry if you hear my squeaky party chair.
We haven't done this in a while. We're in a brand new environment.
Yeah. So I think that's why I'm a little cuckoo right now.
We're a little cuckoo right now.
Sure. Blame it on that.
Yeah. You know.
I don't know how this is going to sound. I hope it's going to sound good, but really, we don't have any control over that. That's really up to
absolutely none.
The audio deities. And our guest today, let's just dive in. Do you want to talk about anything? Is there anything on your mind?
No, I think you summed it up. We're in a new room and it's fucking weird.
Let's do it. Our guest today is Puya Mosseni.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm okay. Still standing on two legs. You know, that's a good thing to be. I think this is also one of those moments that I want to tell the world, you all think I'm so serious and nasty and all of that, and I'm not. I am the crayest of the crays.
This is your platform now to pitch yourself as however you want to be.
To tell the truth.
Yeah.
to speak your truth.
This is the Diane Sawyer exclusive.
Oh, yes, please.
I like that you said you were still standing, and I was just imagining you standing during the podcast, which I can see. I actually can't tell whether you are or not, but I just imagine that would be a lot of energy to bring to the podcast to stand in.
Well, you wouldn't know. It's like I'm in this very weird thing underneath it. I even have my little thing, my step. That's going like as I'm going like, oh my God, what a fucking yuppie I would be if that's what I was doing.
You're on your Peloton recording a podcast.
Yeah, it's like I'm like, yeah, okay, let's go. Yeah, David, Megan, okay. Oh yeah, life is really good. Okay. Whew. I know. Don't you just feel it? Feel the burn.
Feel the burn.
I should tell the people that Puya and I go a ways back. We went to acting school together, and I just miss her so damn much. It's just
Can you
so,
believe 10 God, years?
10 years? What?
What?
I mean,
what?
We graduated like 9.5 years ago, but like, yeah, 10 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, this episode's not for any of the listeners. This episode's
it's really
for Megan
just
and
for Puya and me.
So. Sorry, if you're listening to this, I don't know how you got hold of it.
You're just going for a gush fest.
This is
it's like, welcome. Come have some tea with us.
Yeah.
Come hang out. It's going to be great. It's going to be cozy. It's going to be intimate. It's going to be...
So probably gonna, it's probably going to be a little cry.
Let's dive in again. We've already divin. Let's dive again.
Deeper.
Divin. Deeper.
Puya.
Yes, darling.
Do you consider yourself a successful person?
I think that's very subjective. I come from a long line of perfectionists.
Oh.
And I think they were just all miserable because of it. In some ways, I was talking to someone about a week ago, and I said, if I look at certain things in my life, I'm definitely a success. And I will be a little more specific about that. There was a time in my life that I had no sense of self.
Mm.
I felt that I had to buy people to like me.
Mm.
I had to bribe people to be nice to me. And so I've done a lot of things that now looking back, I'm like, girl, you wasted so much time and you got rid of so many lovely bracelets. When I say pay people, like, I mean, literally.
Uh-huh.
But where I am now in my life, I like who I am.
Mm-hmm.
I like what I've done with my life. I like what I stand for. I like how I have met the challenges of my life. So I judge my life by if I were to die tomorrow, not that I'm planning, but if I were to die tomorrow, like that's my measuring stick. If I were to die tomorrow, do I have any regrets? I have none. And I'm very grateful for that. If what I've accomplished up to today is all that I'm ever going to accomplish, it's considerably further than I ever imagined when I set out on this journey 20-something years ago, coming from Iran and all of that. Do I want a lot more? Oh, absolutely.
Yes, please.
I intend to be, you know, the sassy walking New York broad into my 90s, annoying the orderly at the old people's home, saying like, no, you're not doing it right.
Not at an old people's home. That's just your relationship with the doorman, right? You're going like...
I kind of like, okay, my relationship with my doorman is a little contentious. And for a reason most people would not believe. It's not very comfortable for me to have somebody else get the elevator for me when I'm perfectly capable of doing it. And for the past 14 years, it's been this thing of like, I have to get to the elevator. You know, that's the only way that I can get into it. So I can get it. I feel uncomfortable. You getting up for the sole purpose of pressing that button. But apparently that's how the structure works.
Have you communicated this to your doorman?
Oh, many times.
Interesting. What's his response been? Maybe he likes it.
I think he looks at me and he smiles and he just looks at it that's his job.
It is.
That's what he should do. And I guess because he does it for everybody, I'm kind of like the one person. It's like, I'm like, real. I mean, like if I have like five bags in my hand, sure, I get it. But outside of that, it's just very uncomfortable for me to do it. I think that's me being the stubborn fucking mule that I am, that I shall continue to be, which has also part of it have been, if you want to call my life a success, has been the reason for that, because I have to do things my way. Mm-hmm. I have to be able to respond to that voice inside myself, inside my head, that questions and judges everything that I do, which is also what I tell all my kids. And by kids, I mean my community kids, the you know, the young trans kids, wherever they are on the LGBTQ, you know, universe. And when I talk to them, I always tell them the most important voice in your life is the voice inside your head, because that's the first voice you hear in the morning and it's the last voice you hear at night. So if you can come to terms with that voice, then you're going to have a reasonably content life. But if you don't, that voice is still going to be there and it's just going to bug the shit out of you. So my advice is figure out how to make peace with that voice.
I love that, because when we talk about success on this podcast, we sort of break it down into three chunks. We talk about your success professionally, your success personally with other people in your life, and your success interpersonally with yourself.
And the career thing only became first only because that is like what most people correlate that word to.
That's what most people start the conversation with when we talk about it. Most people start there. Sometimes, every once in a while, people will talk about their family or friends or like, you know, if their parents or something, that relationship first. I think this is the first time we've had someone really talk about your success. If I'm paraphrasing you correctly, that your success comes from your relationship with yourself and your happiness with yourself.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm very honest about the horrible things I've done to myself. And the reason I talk about it isn't so much as like, I'm like, oh my God, I've had a such a hard life. Actually, when people tell me I'm sorry, it's like, I'm like, why? I mean, you didn't do it.
Yeah. Oh my God.
But I think that I've gone from somebody who tried to commit suicide multiple times to somebody who stayed in an abusive relationship because I thought that's what I was worth, to now being in a place in my life that I am the queen of my own life. That I try to share that and that sense of being in control of your life with the people around me. I would say that is my greatest accomplishment, because also nobody can take that away from you. You know, you can have a job and someone can take that away from you. You can have relationships with other people. Someone can take that away from you. But your relationship with yourself, unless you suddenly become schizophrenic, which, you know, also it happens to people. I mean, I may be a little off the chart, but not quite there. But it's like that relationship is something that I discovered when I became a massage therapist about 16 years ago. And I'm very grateful for that. And I feel that everything that happens in my life, every positive, the strength, the love, the generosity towards my community, towards myself, it all comes from that sense. Because, like I said, it's the first and the last voice in my day. And that voice has to, I have to have a friendly relationship with it. Everything else kind of comes and goes and you don't have control over it, but this one thing, that's the core of my being.
Sometimes when Megan's going to bed, I lean over and I give her a little ASMR experience before she falls asleep, and then my voice is the last voice that she hears.
Yeah.
Well, David, would you like to come over and do that to me?
Yes, I would. I want to start with career just to sort of keep the like the
sure.
regular schedule. So tell us about your success professionally, your sort of journey there. I didn't know you were a massage person. That's exciting.
Yeah. I remember that because you
remember in class, I'd be like, you know, between breaks and all of that.
And she would tell me the things I should do for myself because my shoulders were, I mean, they're still bricks, but back in that day. Ooh, bricks was not even the word to describe what my shoulders were. So
also one thing I've learned in the last 10 years is what I used to say, you know, your shoulders are this or your back is this. It's like, I'm like, it could receive a little more love. So it's like, just the way I look at it is like, it's not that it's bad. It can be better. And that's just the shift of mindset that I've had in my whole life. Now, as to profession, I'm assuming we're talking about, you know, it's like the world of performing and acting and all of that.
Yeah. Well, all your activism and your trailblazing, all that.
Oh, my trailblazing. Okay. Yes. So I wake up in the morning and I'm like, good morning, you trailblazer. You.
With your machete.
You should.
Like, it's like, I do double machete, not just one. It's like, that's just one. I don't know if I feel like a success. I feel like I've done things that I didn't think was possible. So I'm going to start with the most recent and go backwards.
Okay.
I would say probably one of the greatest things was being the first Middle Eastern trans person to play a judge on a procedural show on network television was when I guest starred on Law & Order SVU.
Yes.
And I got directed by Mariska Hargitay, which was just the total cherry on top of that.
Oh my God.
What an amazing person. Like, I, you know, when I see people who just totally inspire me and embody everything that I want to be, it's like, I'm like, I just try to absorb it. It's like, if they see me, they would probably think I'm just really weird because I'm just staring at them, like just trying to suck off like their energy.
Just trying to be the sponge.
Yeah. It's like, I'm like, oh, give me. And she was like, just amazing to watch. What a powerful presence with such great confidence. That being in that courtroom, sitting literally above everybody else and kind of like looking down at everybody, that was just surreal. Yeah. Shooting the film See You Then, which has made its premiere this year at South by Southwest. I shot it last year, month and a half before the lockdown started. So it's like, I mean, just talk about timing.
Like, for the curtain there.
You know, we got done shooting on January 31st.
Wow.
And I flew back on the 1st. So like, that's how close it was. And this year, I mean, it's gone to South by Southwest, Disorient, Martha's Vineyard. Now it's in Wicked Queer. And then it's going to Atlanta Film Festival and Florida. I'm proud to say that its IMDb rating is 8.2. And on Rotten Tomatoes, we've gotten a 96% for critics rating. It's like, to be kind of like, you know, the number one star on the call sheet for something like this.
Yeah.
It's just, it's amazing. But I would also be very honest. Like, I would watch my performance and I'm like, I don't know if I'm good or bad. I honestly couldn't tell you.
I
can tell you my co-star, like I can look at her and it's like, I'm like, oh my God, she's so amazing. Oh my God. I was watching it with my mom and I keep saying like, isn't she amazing? She's so amazing. She's just, like, did you see that thing? So like, I'm very proud of that. The recurring guest stars I did on Falling Water on USA a few years ago. That was great. The Big Dogs on Amazon.
That's right. Big Dogs.
It, you know, it's a particular way that the industry sees me. Very strong, very kind of like no BS. Now, whether I happen to be a judge or a cab driver's association leader or a scientist or a spy on Madam Secretary, I mean, like, that was my entree into network television, playing an Iranian spy that comes out, gets basically manhandled and shot. Okay. That was my entrance into network television. As I like to remember it, you haven't really arrived until you've died on network television. So that was my first step. That was my first step. We got to do an Audible play with Williamstown Theater Festival.
Amazing.
A beautiful play written by Shakina Nafak about these group of trans women and their families from different backgrounds, different socioeconomic states, different ages, different ethnicities, all coming together. And basically, you know, you kind of get a snippet of all of their stories to be that. Along people like Kate Bornstein and Ivory Aquino and Telly Long and Shagina Nifak. It's like, it's just to be in things like that, you know, it's fabulous. I would say the one thing that always kind of like catches in my mind is that the industry still doesn't quite know what to do with all the different qualities I bring to the table. Hmm. Because they see me as Middle Eastern. They see me as trans. But I don't look or sound like the stereotypical manifestation of either one. Mm-hmm. I'm too elegant and sophisticated and white collar and Upper East Side-ish to fit into anybody's idea of a refugee, because you think that like refugees are born that way. They're not, by the way. And the representation of the queer community, which they were either victims or villains, or like, you know, inner city street people. We haven't quite gotten to a point that, oh, you know, like your lawyer. There was a show that Laverne was in with Katherine Heigl, and I think it only lasted a few episodes, called Doubt, which it was a lawyer show, and Laverne was one of the lawyers, and I believe Katherine Heigl was one of the other ones. I auditioned for it many years ago. I'm not going to go into the details. It was well, that was an experience. But I always tell people, I am working towards being part of that wave, this wave of change, that we can just see certain marginalized groups in a different light than we've seen them before. And that happens with any minority group. It has happened with African-American men, African-American women, and every other marginalized community. It's like you go through these stages of, you know, they're kind of like a trinket, and then they become fetishized, and then you slowly move forward. So I would like to think that I'm going to be one of those people who will make it a little easier for casting directors or writers or director to be like, you know, we can have a trans character without their storyline being the fact that they're going to have surgery.
Yeah.
Or that they're going to come out. Because let me tell you, there have been many, many, many scripts that I've read. Some of them that I'm like, oh my God, this is the third medical show I'm reading that the trans character is there, that somehow their transitioning is putting their life in danger. And that is the storyline.
In terms of looking at someone who is Iranian and trans, and do you think that you have more roles that, like, the fact that you're from Iran is more mainstreamized, but the trans isn't? And like, what am I asking here?
I think what you're asking me, like, which one gets me into more room?
No, I think I'm summarizing what it sounds like you're saying is that you have experienced more opportunities in which the fact that you're Iranian is mainstreamized and the fact that you're a trans is not, right? That those roles...
Well, as much as being a double spy is being, you know, normalized.
Well, okay, so great. So is that not the case? Like, is that also a sort of like...
To be honest with you, and this is what I've seen, especially when it comes to TV, I feel it's kind of like six of one and half a dozen of the other. Mm-hmm. It depends on the show and what their look is and why they're bringing that particular character in. Because, like, I may be Iranian, but I don't have this, like, kick-ass, badass feel. I'm very white-collar. So there are a lot of shows like NCIS that have Iranian actresses. But, you know, the kind of show that it is kind of like the characters in it are a little grittier, are a little, you know, it's like kick-ass, more like literally kick-ass, not just, you know, kick-ass in essence. And I feel that I may be a little too white-collar feeling for that, too chic, if you may, too elegant. But then on the trans side, the different castings I get, so it's either very young people who are just coming to, they're kind of like radical, revolutionary, or on the other side, they're much older people in their late 50s and their 60s who are just starting to transition. And I have gone into those rooms reading for a character that says the character is in their 60s, possibly late 50s, and they just started transitioning last year. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, yeah, Puya, that's you. You know, sure, yeah, you got me. But then you realize that when you go into a room, we're still in the phase that when it comes to a trans character, it's kind of like every trans character that they can think of, whether they're like 20 years too old or 30 years too young for the character, they bring them in because still they don't have a concrete idea of what this particular person at this particular phase in their life looks like and sounds like. And I look at those opportunities when I got into those rooms for those roles that I was obviously not right for. And I took those opportunities to do my thing, you know, like be the actor that I am, do the scene, knowing that there is no way in hell anybody's going to, you know, it's like receive the fact that I'm in my late 50s and I just started transitioning last year. Okay. They're just no, like, you know, it's like only if the person is blind and is just going by voice. Aside from that, it's like, it's just not going to happen. But I've also had the privilege of being in meetings with casting directors about 4 years ago. There were town halls between casting directors, agents, managers, people from SAG, people from Actors Access, and performers, and talking about what is it we need to bridge the misunderstandings. What is it we're missing out on? What is it you need? What is it you want us to hear, but we haven't heard? And, you know, we've had a few of those, which kind of culminated in last year being the Variety article that Casting Society of America had their top 20 actors of 2020.
Yes, I remember that. Yeah.
You know, it's like I was one of them. It's like when they're like, I'm like, why am I on it? but I mean, they were, because there were these seriously amazing people on it. And I think that's just a step. And one of the things that drives me is to hope that I can be part of that force that pushes that forward. Back to your question, David, as to normalized, I don't know. I think it really depends on who you ask, because I know there's some people that feel more comfortable with the LGBTQ community and not so much with somebody that comes from the Middle East. And then there's vice versa.
Well, and I think I figured out a better way around my question, which maybe, so let's take the Law and Order role for instance, right? Your role in that show the character and its portrayal, right, didn't have anything to do with the fact that you're Iranian, and didn't have anything to do with that the character was trans, right?
Yeah.
And so is that more the goal that, right, that an Iranian trans person plays this role and it's not about anything?
Either one, yeah.
Or is it about showing the story of Iranian people and trans people and it being about that, but them not being these, like, you know, cliched roles?
Cliche character. Well, first of all, like the judge role on SVU and also my scientist role on Falling Water on USA, the one thing about the casting for Falling Water was that they had specified they wanted a trans actor. They were open to trans men and trans women. And in the casting, this is like, I will never forget this. And I always tell people, they said, we want this character to be portrayed by a trans actor. We want this to be part of the fabric of our show. We're never going to talk about the fact that this character is trans. And that is the statement we're making. So these are kind of like two variations of how you can be all of those things. And you can be brought on either not because of any of those things or because of them, but the role that you're playing has nothing to do with either one. And one is kind of like saying, you know, we want to have a very diverse cast. And they did, from top to bottom. Like, their main cast was Black man, an Asian man, a white woman, and the supporting cast from there. It was multicolor, multigender, like everything. Which was great. Now, were they doing it specifically to be diverse? Because sometimes it also, that becomes a fashion. Now, whether it makes sense or not. And sometimes they want to do it because that's the story that they're telling. Now, for me, I don't have a problem if my character is Iranian. I don't have a problem if my character is trans. I have a problem when either of those characters happen to fall into the old cliches. It's like, from a point of view, let's say, a woman who's not trans, seeing another woman's role who's written by a man from a man's point of view, and to exist and to act and to do everything they do for some other character as opposed to being a fully fleshed out character. In that sense, we've gotten to a point that we now know the difference when the character of a woman is written as a sole character or kind of like as a trinket to a male character. Now right. It becomes very obvious. And I think for other minority groups, it's very much the same way. Alexandra Billings, who is somebody that I love and adore. And every time I say it, it's like, I'm like, Alexandra Billings, you should all know Alexandra Billings. I just, you know, it's like, I just watch everything they ever put out there. And they said, when people ask me, do you want to keep playing trans characters? What they said was really lovely. They said, well, if I'm playing it, then on some level, the character is trans.
Yes.
Because
yes.
I'm playing it.
Yes.
Right.
But does that mean that there's only one kind of character and one kind of story? Can the trans character be your boss or your neighbor or your lover or your significant other or your parent or your child, as opposed to prostitute number three, as opposed to victim number four who got like beaten up by somebody on the street.
Yeah.
So I don't have a problem with representing either of the communities that I'm a part of. It's the cliches. Because when you look at the cliches, you inevitably end up being a half human. Mm-hmm. Because only a part of you is shown, because the writer or the director or the producer only care about that part of it which completes somebody else's story.
Right.
Mm. And that's, you know, no actor wants that. Do we put up with it? Do we do it? Of course we do. You know, I mean, like, if they kept bringing me in, they're like, we need a gorgeous, sassy dame. I would find a way to live with that infringement upon my person. But, you know,
it's like a cliche, they say, it's that a burden. Exactly.
It's a burden somebody has to carry. And change is happening. Change is happening. Good. I mean, let's talk a little about the show that you two kind of like connected me with, sees the show doing Saving Wonderland.
Yeah.
Well, which like I'm like, I am so in love with that group of people. It's like just, oh my God, it's not even funny. But to be the White Queen, there's no reason that the White Queen can't be anything. It's just that usually the White Queen happens to be a white cis woman. Sure. That's just what it's usually been. But in this case, the White Queen is played by yours truly.
Yeah.
So this is how change happens. When people can be like, well, this person has a quality that kind of surpasses these other markers. The fact that they come from X, Y, and Z, or the fact that, you know, it's like this is their gender identity. But like their quality as a person would breathe life into this character. Unfortunately, in film and television, we are not quite there yet. We are not. Which is why Ridley Scott still makes the movie happening in Egypt and everybody in it is white.
Whoops. Whoops. Whoops.
Ridley Scott, if you're out there, I'm more than happy to consult you on how to cast, by the way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Ridley's a big fan, so we'll get the message along.
We love you, Ridley.
Just work on yourself a little bit, okay?
We have some notes.
Cheers. Welcome to this, me, Arthur Greenleaf Holmes, until recently, anonymous poet. For those of you familiar with me, hello again. For those of you unfamiliar, who am I? Well, I guess I'm a poet. A lesser poet, and yes, I accept that. Perhaps that's because I like to make people laugh in my poetry, and I suppose that makes me a poet comedian. Why? Why would anyone become a poet comedian? The simple answer is that I love both. My intention throughout this series is to introduce you not only to some of my own poems, but to marry them with the great works of the English language, writers that have influenced, delighted, and astounded me in some fashion. You can always find me on Facebook, and also on Instagram, and sometimes on Twitter, although I'm not very fond of Twitter. I don't do very well when I'm limited to a small number of characters.
Okay, well, then let's take this opportunity to transition to
the person to
personal.
Person.
How's your relationship to success in terms of other people, family, friends, relationships?
I love my friends. I love my friends dearly. Romantically, I'm kind of like, I'm a little mercurial. Hmm. I don't fit into how people imagine relationships being. One of my exes told me that, like, the person who has loved a lot has lived a lot, and he looked at me and was like, "You have lived a lot." I think my search through love and sex and intimacy, it's kind of like been a journey. I'm like, I don't even know. Like, I think what I've been looking for is more like a theory. This illusion of, you know, sparkles and sunshine and waltz playing miraculously in ether and all of that.
All. Don't we all?
Well, what are you talking about? I mean, like, hello.
I like, love to waltz.
I love waltz. Excuse me.
You said you loved waltzing.
I love waltz. Most of the time it's just me by myself, but, you know.
Yeah.
Great. Again, I think part of this goes into personal success. There was a time in my life that I would try to please other people in my life. I do not anymore.
Oh.
Which could make me difficult, but I'm totally okay with that. It's like, again, the voice inside me. And that's not to say, like, okay, you know, go out and be a total bitch to everybody. No. because I think that gives you wrinkles and gas. And that's just, you know, like, but I like
it gives
to.
You wrinkles and gas.
Oh, God, I got to keep that in mind.
Sorry, that really got me. Okay, go on.
Yeah, I think, like, you know, inner turmoil that just does that. And also, that's not a quality I like in other people. Mm-hmm. But the things that I value in my interpersonal relationship, I love being a community mom. Like, one of my kids is having their gender-affirming surgery today.
Wow.
And we had been Skyping for the past year and some, pretty much since the pandemic began, because it threw so much of their plan off the chart. Mm-hmm. And I wanted them to feel that they were being listened to, that they were being supported in whatever humble way I could support them to get them to this day, to keep them on the track. You know, it's like they finished their semester, they stayed on track, taking their medication, going step by step to get to the surgery day. And I feel very proud as a mom to be able to do that. That is the most important thing in my life, like being a community mom. Why? Because when all of that stuff was happening in my life, I felt completely lost.
Mm-hmm.
The internet wasn't what it is today. The world didn't know that I was trans. I was in an abusive relationship where the person I was involved with was fighting with me and threatening to leave me on the day that I'd had the surgery.
Mm.
So, like, that's the world I lived in. And some people could come out of that experience and be like, well, you know what? The world was shitty to me, so I'm just going to fuck everybody over. And I guess that's their point of view. But I made this decision about, I don't know, 20 years ago, maybe 15 years ago, that I think things that happen in life are like a meteor. And you're like a planet moving, and this meteor comes and, you know, you kind of change direction. But I feel that we have control over what that direction is. I took the direction of confidence and kindness versus arrogance and venom.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it does come down to wrinkles and gas. Because the way that I look at it is, I have to live with myself. That is the most important thing. And when I know that I supported a young person to get to where they needed to be, that brings me a lot more contentment. Now, there are many choice words I have for many people in the world that I would like to tell them exactly what I think. And I've also been very vocal about people who've done not so nice things to me, like the young gentleman who tried to run me over with a car, or the three gentlemen who assaulted me when I was in my teens. But I look at it and I'm like, that's how the world that they were in raised them. That, you know, one person was not taught a healthy way of expressing their desires. So when they made an advance and it was shut down, they weren't taught how to deal with that in health. So the way that they dealt with it was, you know, try to run me over with a car. But obviously I'm here, you know, all fingers and toes.
they missed.
And because that anger, who do you think is going to carry it? Mm. I'm going to be the one who's going to carry it. And I don't want to carry it. I don't want to carry it. I've carried enough. So that's what I always tell people, you know, come to terms with the things that happen in your life. Surround yourself with people who bring out your best, who inspire you, who make you be your kindest, your most generous. That's what I try to do every day as I go through my life. And I think that's kind of a success. Am I going to say, like, all of my relationships are just like peachy, hunky dory? Sure. No, they're not.
On the podcast, I'll say that.
And then, like, sure, they are. And I'm just very comfortable with what I want out of my life. When people ask me, they're like, you know, what's your dream? I'm like, my beautiful house on the West Coast with my husband and my boyfriend all living under the same roof. And, you know, it's like me, one of them making breakfast for me because I'm getting up to go and, you know, do my thing as a series regular. Like, that's my form of a dream. Now, if somebody said, well, why a husband and why a boyfriend? I'm like, well, I mean, we could make it two boyfriends, but I mean, like, there are only so many days in a week. So I think the greatest success of my life is probably that the world has tried to kill the child inside me, the kooky, unabashed, totally dreamy kid that thought I could be a Bond girl at 8. Okay, my aspirations have risen since then, but I wanted to be a Bond girl at 8 and, you know, have like 3 spouses at the same time. Those dreams are still alive. I'm very aware of where the reality ends and where the dream begins. but the soul of that child is very much alive. And I would say that has been a great accomplishment, the life I've had.
Are you a golden rule gal? Do you treat other people the way you want to be treated?
That's the main,
cool.
The main thing that's always going on in my head. One of the other things I always tell kids is like, I'm like, be yourself, but be the first one to call out your shit. And it's like, I'm like, yeah, because with privileges come responsibilities. Most people look at the privileges, but not the responsibilities. And I think one of the privileges of being an adult is that you get to do what you want. But one of the responsibilities is that you don't live by yourself in a world.
Yeah.
And the kind of world that you want to live in, you are also part of it. So what you put into it is part of what you reap. So absolutely, absolutely. I know it sounds very cliche, but almost everything I do, like when I talk about politics, yes, I'm a lefty liberal. But whenever I talk about politics, about people who are on the other side of the aisle, I don't want to just go, well, they're bad because they disagree with me, but more thinking about it, well, they're different from me. But is it that what they think is different from me or their whole approach to it? Like when people say, well, liberals are intolerant, I'm like, I think we're confusing two things. Because what one side calls tolerance, it completely undermines people's personhood. That you can't be who you are because that undermines who I am. Mm-hmm. Versus what my side says, that I just want you to acknowledge that I'm here and I'm different from you, but I still have as much right and as much citizenry privileges as you do. And when you look at it within that structure, it's not just the difference of one side saying something and the other side saying different. It's their whole point of view of what does it mean to be a citizen and what are our rights and responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm always asking that question because I would hate to be a hypocrite. It just so doesn't go with my cheekbones. It just so doesn't. And also it doesn't age well on social media.
And it really does cause gas. It does.
It does.
I have a question about being a mom. Now, do people find you through, are you with a certain organization? That's how they come to find you? Or is it because you've met them in person and then they kept in touch and now you mentor them?
I think it's kind of like social media.
Uh-huh.
So once in a while I do, especially when I do a podcast or a panel in Farsi, which that is just an amazing part of my life, which has only been something that's happened in the last 2 years.
Wow.
And when my kids in Iran or people who are in Turkey or in Europe, they're like waiting for their asylum, or they're in this in-between place. Their families don't understand them. They've left the country. They don't know what is their future. And somehow they find me through something I've done and they message me. And sometimes I call them back on Instagram.
Wow.
And we talk for an hour or two or however long we can. And I have no claim that I can help that much. But at the very least, I can let them know that they're not crazy, that they're not alone, that there's nothing wrong or dirty or sinister about them just because who they are. And in the last 2 years, I've realized, well, that may not be much to me, to these kids that I've not heard anything other than the fact that there's something wrong with them and God hates them and, you know, it's like just fill in the blanks. For someone that they consider to be successful, now whether I am or not, that's debatable. But someone to them is a role model, taking the time to talk to them. And sometimes we may not talk for a few months and then they leave me a message and then we talk. And then I see kind of like the course of their life over the course of a year or 2 years.
Mm.
And I kind of see just that little bit of someone being there, affirming them, seeing them, listening to them, joking with them, being vulnerable with them, that allows them to come out, to let go of some of the baggage. And I wish I could do so much more. But for now, if all I can do is talk to one person here and one person there, and share my experiences and say, like, you know, somebody tried to run me over with a car and that was bad, but here I am and it didn't define my life. And it wasn't my fault, because there was a time I thought it was my fault. And I'm sure a lot of these kids feel that so much horrible stuff that's happened to them is their fault. And to kind of like be a satellite mom, sort of, and to just, you know, get to be there. And I think if I wasn't an actor, I don't know if I'd be as comfortable doing that, because, you know, we talk for a living. So it helps. And to do that, that goes back to, if all I have accomplished in my life is the things I've accomplished up to this point, to be there for a few kids, for them to think that I'm somebody of note and inspire them, then my life has had a purpose.
Yeah.
And I'm very grateful for that.
Yeah. I mean, it makes me think of, like, you know, when they teach you theater history or something in school, it's like, well, how did actors come about in the first place? That they were literally the living, breathing guides to survival, because they show those who either are part of the world or the experience or not. But then really, they really are a guide to survival for those that are in the very steps that you're in, you know.
And I really think the studio, Maggie Flanagan Studio, their emphasis on the truth of the moment, that has been a huge part of that catalyst in me to question, to be open. I mean, like, when I was at the studio, I wasn't out. And when people ask me why, I'm like, because if you look back, you realize I was the only trans person in the studio in the 2 years I was there. It did not feel like it wasn't my world.
Sure.
And 10 years ago, it was different. And I'd had bad experiences many years before that, like being on set and being outed on set and, you know, it's like stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I just didn't see that as a possibility. But I'm glad that that was the studio that I was at. I'm glad that most of my friends from there, including you, including many of the other people that we were together, they are my friends. But I also think when I came out, I think a lot of people, even people that we had gone to school with at the studio, I think it gave them a different idea of who I was. Because I think up to that point, they just saw me as, like, you know, this tall, lanky, like, you know, ex-model, like, who is she? Who does she think she is? But then afterwards, they're like, oh, okay, there's something more to her than she's going to, like.
I just always thought of you as like a living, breathing Titania, always. That's how I always thought of you.
Well, oh my God, like, the names you and I had for each other.
Oh, yes.
I feel like we've drifted into it, but in the third sort of like relationship with yourself, I think we've circled around that point of success. Is there more you want to say about sort of how you got to that being such a successful place? Or
I don't think it's a closed road. And I always remind myself, is like, I think our entire lives are paths of self-discovery. And I'm always looking to find out more, to become more comfortable in who I am. Don't apologize for what I do or what I say, because I will make sure that everything that comes out of my mouth also carries with it my heart and my golden rule that you mentioned, you know, do unto others as you want others to do unto you. So I don't think it's a closed road. I'm part of the journey. I have obviously come very far, considering where I started and the amount of self-shame, maybe even self-hate. I went from asking why did I have to be born the way I am, to getting to a point of saying, thank you very much for giving me my existence as I am. Because had I not been who I am, had I just been a cis boy or a cis girl, and been, you know, have been attractive in the way that I am, and had that been the sum of my existence, I probably would have been another spoiled, clueless girl whose whole goal in life would have been to marry someone wealthy. But because that was not my life, it forced me to look outside of my immediate world. It forced me to sit at a table with kids who lived at group homes, to break bread with people who lived on the street. And to be able to do that with people who I consider to be a community, and yet were so different from anybody I'd ever been around, that forced my view of the world wide open. And I am so grateful for that. I think I would have been so nauseatingly annoying and cunty had that not happened. You said I could curse.
I don't know. I love it. I just love it. Before, so
I love the usage of the word cunty.
And so in that sense, what I tell my kids is, do you know how iron becomes steel? Iron has to go through a great deal of pressure and heat to become steel. And I have become steel. Yes, it has a cost. Yes, the scars are there. But I believe that what I've gotten out of it, I think I'm a more compassionate person. I think I look at people with a wider lens. I think I extend my hand out further than I would have otherwise. And to me, that's success. To me, that's personal success. It makes my heart happy.
Hell yeah.
To somebody else, it may not be, but to me, yeah.
Yeah, that's the best kind of success.
Well, we're towards the end, so here's what's going to happen. I've got some new
what?
End of show copy that I'm supposed to read, and I haven't looked at it yet.
Oh, so he's going to cold read that
gonna
for us.
I'm going to cold read it, and it's going to be great. And then, Puya, we can have you plug anything that you'd like to plug. And then I want you to give us your advice for success. You have a moment to gather yourself. As I say, thank you to everyone for listening. This has been Dress for the Podcast You Want, a podcast about success. I'm David. And pause for Megan. David, don't read this part out loud.
I'm Megan.
You can find out more about this podcast and others like it. Like
my mic just fell.
Mike fell over. Megan's mic was laughing too hard at my shenanigans.
Shenanigans.
You can find out more about this podcast and others like it, like Learn a Little and Arthur Greenleaf Holmes at background. That's right, backgroundjoys.com or at backgroundjoys on social media. I'm no good at just reading text without any judgment. I was like, is that right?
What? No, you
right.
were reading? Get out.
Also, be sure to visit dimlywit.com or at dimlywit productions to check out some of our partner podcast friends like Bad Examples, Obsessed with the Best, and We're Just Talking Podcast. You can support us, that's me and Megan, directly by visiting patreon.com/backgroundjoys. That was my new outro text. Did you like it?
Yes.
I think I say all that most weeks. Except for the names of the Dimly Wit episodes.
Maybe I was trying to pick out what was different.
Yeah, maybe I'll zhuzh that in my own little David way.
And a little zhuzh.
Give it a little zhuzh.
Zhuzh pot.
That's me, I'm a little zhuzh pot.
A little pot of zhuzh.
Puya, where can people find out more about you? What do you want to plug?
If anybody wants to find me, I'm kind of like a one trick pony. You look for Puya Land on any platform, you will find me, as in like Disney, except Puya.
God, please take me there.
Puya Land is actually like, you know, it started many years ago from a show, and it's in my mind, it's where you get to be who you are and you get to get the respect that you show others. So it's kind of like that mythical world. What do I want to plug? My film, See You Then. Yeah. It's an amazing film. If you like women's stories, if you like queer stories, if you like representation of people from different races, it has great rating. Critics seem to love it. Right now, it's at Wicked Queer until the 18th. And then after that, it goes to other festivals, like Atlanta Film Festival and Florida Film Festival, and whatever comes after that.
So crazy.
And you know what? You don't have to follow what I tell you. Just follow what really speaks to you and go and support those artists.
Love it. And what's your advice for success? How can we be successful like you?
Successful like me? Well, I don't know if I can say all of that in mixed company. successful like me, if I was going to say, above all, be true to yourself. And I know somebody else, some other white man said that many, many, many centuries ago. But, you know, it just sounds a little stuffy when he says it. So it's like, I'm like, you know, listen to the voice inside yourself. That usually guides you. But really listen. That's all I have.
I love it.
That's awesome.
All right, Megan. Take us out.
Hey, it's over.
Give us our sponsorship. Who is this episode brought to you by?
By Yukonuba dog food.
Is that real?
It's real.
That is a real dog food, but they didn't sponsor us.
They definitely don't sponsor us.
Okay.
They have the best dog food. Do you want me to do the voice? I can be like,
I want you to do the jingle. What's the Yukonuba dog food jingle?
You know you want a Yukonuba dog food.
We're either going to get sued or hired, and I love it.
Hosted on dimlywit.com.